once more under the breach, dear friend.
Let's close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting second hour of the Personal Wealth Coach. And you're certainly welcome to give us a call in here at 773-1400. Local area code is, of course, 254. So 254-773-1400. If today is February 25th, where you are, or when you are, as the case may be. And what else are we going to talk about?
Oh, we were talking about Greece so much. Now it's hanging out in my mind. But basically, there's one area that's nice to talk about. The stock market has done really, really well. You mentioned it a lot last hour. But we've had a series of ups in the market that are relatively unusual. Relatively being, in my experience, my actual being around the market, it's only happened very, very few times in my entire career. This well, this compact together, market up, occasional market down, something that's an adage in the stock market that goes way back. The stock market is more down than up, and it's more up than down. On any given day, historically, it's more likely to be down than up. But over the long haul, it's a lot more up than down historically. So what we're seeing on any given day is the market's up on most days recently. I have to remind people, this is really when we earn our living. It isn't when the market's down. People are going, I'm scared. You guys know what you're doing. It's when the market's up that we earn our living. And a universal concept that you should all be aware of is that the market goes down. I know a lot of people out there have a lot of experience, and they say, of course it does. We experience that. We tend to get blind to it when we get a long streak of upward. That's when our euphoria starts taking over, and we start, it's like being at, you know, in a lot of people.
Is that like a self-driving car, like a euphoria?
Yeah, euphoria. That's it. There we go. Folks at the gaming tables in Vegas have the same kind of experience when they see somebody that just can't seem to lose. Just be aware that that is what's going on right now. And as you said last week, you barely touched on it this week, a lot of the upward movement in the market is still based on a concept that's based in rhetoric of, we're going to simplify the tax code, we're going to lower taxes, we're going to lower regulation.
And Secretary Mnuchin, kind of in a way that the news media didn't pay a lot of attention to, confirmed what you just said. He said that even if we do all, and he said the tax reform would be in place by August, but still nobody's explained how they're going to pay for it. But if everything that is promised occurs, then...
Well, first off, that would be contradictory, because there have been promises made that contradict each other.
What I mean, but the big economic promises, which are basically infrastructure building and tax reform and regulatory. Well, actually, he just talked about the tax reform and
tax
the regulatory
reform.
He made a speech this week, and it wasn't a lot of people pay attention to it because it isn't too exciting, and it wasn't a campaign speech, and it wasn't in front of a rally. But it's truthful and it's factual, and he's got it correct.
And we're still talking Mnuchin?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
He said we really wouldn't see the effects beginning to take. The actual tax reform isn't going to happen until next year, in essence. In other words, it'll be 2018 before we see taxes go down.
Right, because you can't take a year that's already started and not allow people to know what kind of taxes they're going to pay in that year. You and I pay quarterly taxes, mm-hmm. and those are called estimated taxes, and it's estimated based on current tax law. There's no way we know what to pay if the tax law is in the middle of being changed.
And it's also going to take at least a year, and this is very optimistic. He said it's very optimistic. It may take much longer. It's also going to take at least a year to get the regulatory rollbacks in place that people want to see, because it's as difficult to roll back a regulation as it is to create one, and it takes a year. Let me tell you like this. It took 2 to 3 years to put those regulations in place, it very well could take 2 to 3 years to roll back the same regulations.
And it's not going to be done smoothly. Right. And they're going to have hiccups and problems all through that rollback. In that, we saw something this week. There was a simplification of a rule, a regulation, being pushed by the administration to say, let's simplify the rules. The problem is that the mandate to simplify the rules is being handed to the bureaucrats. And the bureaucrats are hardwired deep down to not know how to simplify things without making them more complicated. So unless there is a lot of supervision and a lot of guidance on how to simplify the regulations, you can't just say you're required to throw out 2 regulations for every regulation that comes in, because the bureaucrats will nitpick that to death. And you'll get something that is far more complex, because they'll make one regulation that covers 2 things to get around it. And that regulation will be very hard to understand.
And it's just the market may, right now we've got a price earnings ratio, a current price earnings ratio in the stock market that's pretty high.
Yeah.
It isn't nosebleed territory. It's nothing like it was in 1999 or early 2000. We're not in market crash territory. But here's the issue: for the market to continue to go up at even as it did this week, roughly between 6 and 7 tenths per week, it would be so high by the end of the year if it kept doing that. I mean, you multiply that times 52 and you get another roughly 40% gain in the market, 30 or 40% gain in the market.
Yeah, so, that's way too high.
And even if you're very, very conservative with that, you get a 20% gain in the market by the end of the year. Plus, so the market would have gained 25%, which, by the way, people say, why not? Because over the last 12 months, it gained 25%. Why shouldn't it gain 25% through the rest for the whole year? And the answer is, that's not very likely to happen.
Yeah, same reason why you don't expect your house to double in price in 2 years. It's done it in the past, but that's typical of a bubble. It means that people are way over the top. Values don't change that quickly on the same product.
Yeah.
Unless there just suddenly is a scarcity of that product or a high demand for that product. Well, the demand, if you're planning on using it and keeping it, then you don't pay an exorbitant amount of money for it. If you're planning on using it and keeping it, you want to get it at a good price and then hang on to it for a long time.
Which brings us to a very interesting point. Average price of houses in the United States went up 7.1% for the last 12 months, which is another indicator that the economy is doing well.
Yeah, there's places where it went up a lot more than that, mm-hmm. and there's some places where it's still going down.
The other thing that is pretty significant is new home sales were up. Well, they weren't up a lot, but they were up for the year. They were up a few percent. Actually, new home sales were up 12%. Existing home sales were only up less than 3.8%, 3.7% of which was last month. And why does that make any difference to you? Well, there's a very crucial economic point here.
Mm-hmm.
If we have our inventory on existing homes for sale is dropping every month. In other words, more homes are being sold than are being put on the market. Now, as the prices keep going up, eventually we would expect to see more homes go on the market. But people don't sell their home just because the price went up.
No.
And they sell their home when they want to move.
Right.
And here's the point. We're not building homes fast enough to accommodate the demand, mainly because we can't find people to work on them.
Right. And this is a prediction I'm going to make. So those of you that are out there and listening for predictions, this is where to listen. This prediction is based on something that the two of us in here have said for the past probably 6 years. We watch a number called household formations. And that is the economics term for young people buying their own house, getting married, buying houses, buying cars, kind of the going out on their own. And that household formation, if we look at the growth in population and we just look at the demographics and we say these this many people should be turning 18 or 25 in a given year, and so this many people should be buying houses, and they're not. Instead, they've been saving money. And one of the things that we've commented on here at great length is that the millennial generation, this young generation, is the highest savings rate per capita, except for if you're above the age of 67. Well, you just did a big jolt because you fall in that category. So the highest savings rate, except for the people that are fully retired or in a group of people their own age that are fully retired, is the millennials, because they've been saving for houses because they grew up in a point where they watched their parents and the people around them buy too many houses with not enough down payment and get really, really hurt. They watched banks go from "we'll give your dog a loan" to "we won't give you a loan even if you have more money than the bank." And so they've recognized that in order to buy a home, they have to have a very, very generous down payment, and they have to save that over a long period of time. And that means that people have been buying fewer houses, and this is right after a housing crash. So a housing crash happens, and fewer houses are being purchased as well in the middle of all of that. Everybody that was in the building trade, there are a few of them left. A lot of them are not in the building trade anymore. They went into cabinetry. They went into high-skilled work doing things that they already knew how to do.
And they also decided that, particularly in Texas, working outside in the middle of the summertime driving nails was maybe not the thing they would prefer to be doing above all others.
So here's my prediction. Now I've laid back the demographics, the trends that have led us to where we are, and the reason why prices are going up at the moment. There's not a lot of building, and there's a lot of people that have been saving for a long time that are finally coming out and buying their houses. At some point, people are going to look around and say, "Hey, there's profit to be made here. Let's get to building houses." They're going to look around and go, "It's really hard to find people that are capable and willing of building good houses." We're right in the middle of a robotics boom. I mean, just in the last 10 years, we went, you know, in the last 15 years, we went from a housing site having everybody has a hammer and a bunch of nails to everybody has a nail gun and there's half as many people out there, to the next step is the nail gun doesn't have a hose attached to it anymore and there's half again as many people out there and less houses being built, to if we don't have the people to build the houses without paying a huge amount of money for those people, we're going to go robotics on it. It's already happening. It's very preliminary, but it's running nicely along in parallel with the driverless car concept. We're going to have robotics taking over, and we're going to do what has happened in the past every time we have a housing boom. We're going to go from not enough houses to the builders start building, the houses start coming on the market, and they overbuild. They do it every time. This is every housing boom in the history of the United States starts with not enough houses and ends with way too many houses. So if you're looking at what's going on today, I would say we've got another 3 years of fairly good expectation of housing prices going up. And then over the next 2 years or so, it may level out or it may continue to go up. But sometime in that time period, we're going to level out. And then we're going to have a drop in home prices. Just be aware of it. There's another factor that I didn't mention before, but it's an important one, and that is interest rates. People tend to buy a house not based on the dollar value of the house, but on the monthly payment of the mortgage. And if interest rates start going up, you're going to see a return to something that I saw when I was first starting my career. People's annual income was a really good estimate for the value of their house. If you made $100,000, you were likely to have a $100,000 house or somewhere right in that vicinity. Now, if you make $100,000, it's not at all unusual for you to have a $350,000 house because they're a lot more affordable with interest rates being down. As interest rates go back up, expect home prices to be affected. So what I'm saying is that for the next 3 years, expect rose-colored glasses for the housing market. After that, hang on to your britches because we should be well and truly overpriced and we should have other alternatives.
You know, I've not seen any objective data on it, but you and I both know somebody, people who are in the business of converting the concept of a manufactured house, modular manufacturing houses, from something that is almost profanity.
Right.
To mainstream.
Yeah.
And I would, if we, a lot depends on how immigration policy is held. If we do what the president has proposed and what Homeland Security says they're going to do, which is get rid of a tremendous amount of workers in the United States, and people who are doing that work are generally doing it in fairly reasonable environmental conditions, but at least some of them are, I suspect what we will see is a reluctance to work outside of air conditioning, which means that home building will become more and more critically dependent upon making the pieces of the house someplace else, because it will be relatively few people who are willing to go into a building site and work in the very uncomfortable weather. And the other problem is, of course, if you're working on a house and you're getting paid by the hour or something like that, mm-hmm. and it rains, you don't get paid that day.
Right.
Which, so we're running into in the United States a very serious crisis, and that crisis is we don't have enough people ready, willing, and able to do manual labor. The people who are actually working in the construction industry right now generally are, a lot of them are in their 50s. And approaching retirement, approaching Social Security retirement, and they're approaching the point where they physically are going to be unable to do that. Which
that's a hard, hard right. job, and there's a lot of injuries on that job.
And then you run into the next problem, and it's something else that I think I would love to see somebody in Washington address this seriously and think about it. And that is, if we're going to spend $1 trillion upgrading the infrastructure in the United States, we're going to have a lot of people who are willing to work out in the hot sun and in the rain and whatever else is going on out there to rebuild that infrastructure. And frankly, I don't know where they're going to come from.
All right. We have a lot of people in this country, legally citizens, that do that kind of work, but they tend to be fully employed already.
Yeah, they already are employed.
That's an area that employment is – I mean, people tend to have jobs pretty quick in that area right now. It wasn't that case a couple of years ago, but right now it is the case.
At least according to the data that I read – let's see, where did I get that from? Someplace. I've got the article here. The problem is – we literally have fewer people who are ready, willing, and able to work or are working in construction than we had 10 years ago. And construction jobs are people are having trouble filling them. So somebody would need to address that. It's politically infeasible right now to say, let's have immigration reform. The kind of reform that was passed by the Senate, and we basically say we've got a lot of jobs that need to be filled, so we need to let a lot of people in from south of the border to fill those jobs. I don't think politically that's going to fly at this point.
No, it's not. And when people hear us say that, they hear, well, the McClures, they think immigration should just open the borders. We're talking about economic factors. If you have a demand with no supply, that's what we're talking about. It's a rational discussion, not a policy discussion. What we do know about supply and demand is if you increase demand and supply takes time, whether that's for workers or for houses or for anything else, if there are business owners out there that like to make profits, that's a big if, because some folks say it's less profitable today, but I think most business owners actually do want to make a profit. They are going to find a way to get less expensive labor if the market is demanding a house at a given price. They either cut corners and make bad houses, which means that they won't be making houses for a while because people will stop buying from them. Or they come up with a new way of making houses at high quality for less money. And that's what we expect in this, is that we have had a shift. There are a lot fewer, as a percentage of our population, a lot fewer people in the manufacturing business. And that includes home building. And that means that we got to find new manufacturing processes, just like every other part of manufacturing in the United States, to keep the demand met and make a profit doing it. And the best way to do that is to offer a higher quality product at a lower price than your competitors. So people are there. The race is on now to how do we replace the construction worker? That race has begun. Once the race is won, once that competition, it's going to be won by a lot of people because it's a ubiquitous technology. Robotics is everywhere. Once it happens, the price of houses is going to start falling. If you're in construction right now, a good way to make money is to continue constructing for a while, but then you may not have a job. Find somebody that's working in these technological areas and needs someone who has some experience on how to build houses to teach them how to build a robot, and then learn at the process how to keep up with those robots and make them keep working, and you'll have a very, very high paying job. Ignore it at your own peril. There's my prediction. It goes all the way out to the workers involved and to the people who own houses and expect them to continue to rocket into the sky for the next decades. Just know that that's not the way history has worked.
Well, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach on KTEM. And telephone number in here remains 254-947-1111. I don't know why Ed gets all the calls and we don't.
This is, you just gave the office number.
No. 254-773-1400. I'm sorry.
Yeah. There you go.
And there's another aspect of that.
Let me throw in the last piece of that. I just said don't expect your house to rocket into the sky. That's unless you work for SpaceX or Tesla or Virgin, because they're working on rockets.
Well, I don't
and
know.
They might rocket into the sky.
I don't know that the house would rocket into the sky. Even
I mean, it's a living, you know, the place. It's got a habitation unit attached.
Yeah, well,
to
your habitat might, but there's a subtle difference.
Okay.
Some news that came out in another bit of esoteric news that economic geeks are fascinated by.
This is why we don't get calls. You were just asking why Ed gets calls and we don't, because
the number of jobless claims that were made in last week dropped to the lowest level since 1973.
Now, we said almost that exact quote a couple of weeks ago and then a couple of weeks before that.
It's because each week the number of people who are showing up and saying, I want unemployment because I got laid off. Now, you know, I will say that Montgomery Ward has done a wonderful job. They're laying off 6,000 people, so they added 6,000 to the jobless claims.
It's not Montgomery Ward.
Not Montgomery Ward. J.C. Penney. Montgomery Ward laid off everybody a long time ago.
Yes, I was going to say, I didn't realize they had any workforce.
No, they don't. They died. So what does that mean? Why are we not seeing layoffs? Why are we not seeing, even if there are layoffs, but why are we not seeing people show up and ask for unemployment? And the reason they're not showing up is because they can almost immediately get a job again. And secondly, there's just not a lot of people laying off employees. People, businesses are busily trying to keep the employees they have. And there are a very significant number of job openings in the United States going unfilled. All of these things combined together paint a very, very clear picture that we have a labor shortage in the United States right now, and it's probably going to be exacerbated. Can we see as some form of inflation that would follow on as a result of that as wages go up? And this is the big quandary. Of course, historically, economists have said when you get a shortage of workers, then the employers begin to compete with each other to bid for workers, and the wages start up, and that's what starts inflation rolling, and that's one of the things that the Federal Reserve is talking about and why they're probably going to raise interest rates a couple of times this year. But we are in an export economy, not completely, but we have enough of our economy that's focused on export and enough of our economy that's afraid of imports that we literally can't raise wages because we're in competition with the rest of the world.
Right. Except for things like houses, because it's really hard to build a house somewhere else and put it in the United States.
Which is why
until we get modular.
Which is why construction workers' wages have gone up and the prices of houses are going up, because people want to buy houses and there's not enough houses to buy. But most of what we do in the United States is retail. Most of it is what we call consumer consumption, and it's like 67 to 70% of our economy. And you simply can't afford a business that's making a profit, but it isn't making a huge profit, can't afford to raise wages without raising prices on its goods and services. And if it raises prices on its goods, on the stuff it sells, then somebody online will outbid it and will do better.
Right.
But
right,
you can expect to see the price of services. Plumbers, different issue. Electricians, if you've had to have an electrician come into your house and do something recently and you see what they charge, you will realize there are some areas where the wages are going up very nicely and the cost is going up very rapidly, because they are not in competition with somebody from overseas.
And then let me give you another prediction, and this is an easier prediction to be sure of. It's harder to track, too, because I'm giving it a 20-year time period. In 20 years, when you need an electrician or a plumber, it's not going to be a person. You're going to have robotic assistance in fixing your electrical needs and your plumbing needs.
I don't think so in my house.
In 20 years?
No.
I think it will happen in 20 years.
My house is wired so weirdly that I think a robot would go nuts looking at it.
It would right now. In 20 years, the computing power of that robot is going to be so much better than the electrician who can't figure out where the wires are going, because it's going to go and put little leads on all the wires and figure out where all of them go before it does anything, and it'll do it relatively quickly. And I'm saying that, and this is the same kind of reaction that 5 years ago, if you'd said driverless car, people would say, not my car. I'm not letting any robot, no robot knows how to drive a car. And now technology in 5 years has moved far enough ahead to make the decisions to be safer driving the car than any human.
I used to make the comparison with people in their ability to make good judgments about their future if they simply allowed their minds to do it, if they focused on it, by telling them that, and this was about 5 years ago, that there have been attempts to drive trucks with the truck basically full of computer, and the computer couldn't keep the truck on the highway. Well, as
we
have reported on here, the first major cross-country interstate delivery by a computer-driven truck
happened a couple of months ago.
It happened, and it was, by the way, I think very appropriately, an 18-wheeler trailer loaded with beer.
Budweiser, yes.
And
Bud Light. It's something to know about that is the cost of the computer that was running that truck was something approaching the annual salary of a truck driver. That's competitive if they just use that computer. The thing with it is that was a custom-made, lots of engineering hours into it computer what we're going to have in the future is it'll be the same price as a normal truck, only it will drive itself. And we say that like it's a big deal, and a lot of people hear it like it's a big deal today. In 10 years, if we listen to this program, we're going to be going, well, that's kind of obvious. Of course, everybody should have known that, didn't they? Well, no. Every time we have a big technological shift like this, there's a lot of people that go, oh, I don't think that's going to happen.
Well, let's put it like this. General Motors, Ford, and everybody else that's in the major
Tesla,
automobile business.
BMW, Mercedes,
are
Kia.
Putting billions of dollars on a bet that within 4 years, they will be mass producing self-driving cars.
By the time, I would think that in 10 years, we're going to have legislation, very clear legislation, limiting the ability for a human to drive in certain circumstances. Just expect it. It's going to be there. And, you know, I've got a 2-year-old daughter, and people tell me, you know, when she turns 16 and you watch her driving herself away, and I'm like, that's probably not
probably
gonna
won't happen.
Probably won't happen. Some of my car is going to drive her away.
I tell you, a big business, if I could, and I'm not telling you to invest in it, but I think there's a tremendous potential. Somewhere, somebody's going to come up with an aftermarket. Once
it's already out there.
The aftermarket car driving computer.
Yeah, it's already out there.
Oh, okay.
They're already developing it. There are companies out there. In fact, Google and Waze, they're moving more in that direction at the moment. They went in the direction of designing their own car, and then they decided that the best approach for the short-term market need would be just to have a package that you could put on your car and have it drive itself. So that's the direction they're going with it. Now,
well,
eventually they're going to have cars that they need to sell.
Speaking of self-driving radio programs.
Right.
We probably need to do some commercials.
That sounds like a good idea. If you'd like to join us, this is the Personal Wealth Coach. I'm Jake.
He's Jeff.
And together we represent two forms of the Personal Wealth Coach, both the radio program and the business side. If you'd like to join us and join the conversation, if today is the 25th of February, Saturday, the 25th of February, 2017. You can join us. You can call the phone number 254-773-1400. We'll be back on the other side of these commercials with more of the Personal Wealth Coach.
And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach with Jeff and
Jake
McClure. You know, we were saying something about the European Union, European zone, sensing a threat from Greece, but there's some good news out there, too. And in January, for the first time in since 2013, so for the first time in 4 years, there are no countries in the Eurozone that are in deflation.
Well, that's nice to hear.
Which is, you may say, whoa, so big deal. Well, inflation means that there's enough. The fact that they've returned to very, very low inflation, admittedly very low inflation, but inflation, means that there is enough demand from people buying things in the countries across Europe, that for the first time since 2013, the people who are selling things don't have to keep lowering prices. Now, frankly, it's going to take a while to come out of the hole that they drilled themselves into, because what happens is when you're lowering prices, you got to lay people off. And as you lay people off, there's less money to buy things.
Right. So you got to lower prices.
You got to lower prices again. And all across Europe, this has been the cycle, and it has been very painful, and it's one of those things that can wind down into a self-feeding spiral and create a depression. And that's, of course,
I would say Greece is in a depression.
Greece
– it's a localized depression, and it was up till recently deflationary.
Except that they're really not, because if
– they have open borders.
Well – if you're not working in Greece, you get paid.
Or at least you get the promise of being paid. That's
They're actually still continuing to pay people. Unlike Spain, where if you are working, but you're working for the government, you may not get paid.
Right. Well, in Greece, they have missed 4 to 8 months of payments at different times to government employees and to pension holders. But it's just some weird stuff. Greece, and it's just a strange place.
I kind of suspect that there's a lot of underground economy and barter going on.
Yeah. A lot of that. Most people have a big garden. Most people have other forms of food coming in than from their own purchase.
Probably a lot of the unemployed people in Greece are actually working.
Yeah, and that's
part
of the thing.
They're just doing something and they get paid with food or whatever.
They get paid with food or even with cash, but taxes don't get paid on that. And taxes going up means more of that's happening, not less.
To say what's going on there is fascinating is an understatement, except, and the more I've looked at the history of this, the more I see this has been going on since the Roman Empire.
Yeah, before that, this is Greece we're talking about. This is way before the Roman Empire. They've been doing this same kind of cycle of build up and drop down.
The question, again, and we mentioned this before, is, because they're now on a single currency, the cost of them bailing out of their debts, which they used to do every 10 years with the drachma, they would simply say, okay, take all the drachma that you have, and
just look at Brazil.
We basically will say 1,000 drachma now equal 1 drachma.
Right.
And we'll start over again. In other words, your previous drachma was a tenth of a cent, and you may still, if you owe 1,000 drachma to somebody, you now owe a tenth of a cent.
Greeks would go, I'm calling a mulligan. It's a mulligan. Yeah. Okay, just change the money around.
They
it's
would
fine.
Just start all over again, and nobody would loan anybody any money, and their economy was in the pits because of that, but they would just, the government would print a lot of money. And
they
can't
print money anymore.
You know, it's kind of like they're doing in Venezuela right now, where the inflation rate is measured in hundreds of percent per day, which is another crisis area that eventually is going to blow up.
You just heard Jeff here, and you'll hear me at any given time say some things here. We just said that we were excited that the European Union is back into inflation, and then we just referenced Venezuela in horrible inflation. Inflation is one of those things that a small amount of inflation is good for the economy. A large amount of inflation is bad for the economy. A small amount of deflation is bad for the economy, and a large amount of deflation is one of the worst things that could possibly happen to an economy. So I get this sometimes, so I'm going to throw in a quick example, maybe definition of what is inflation. Inflation means that because everybody is doing it, if you are required to pay people more for doing exactly the same work, they're not doing it any better, you have to pay them more because your competitors are doing the same thing. Well, the only way you can do that is by raising the price of your products. Well, if you're doing it and everybody else is doing it, then you have inflation. The opposite's true with deflation. We were in a deflationary trend for a big chunk of the last decade, where people would wait till Christmas to buy something or wait till after Christmas to buy something because the prices are going to be lower than they are now. We still have that tendency to say, well, I'm going to wait for the Christmas sale to buy the television. And that's because in electronics and in all the areas of the newest technology, prices are still dropping, and we've had a lot of new technology come out. That's a deflationary trend. When it happens everywhere so that you get paid, literally get paid less money in a year than you did the year before, and all the prices are dropping at the same time, that's a really bad thing. Inflation, a lot of our listeners were around during the Carter administration when we had inflation that was extreme and absurd in the double digits of 20% inflation in a given year. You remember that and you say inflation is horrible. Inflation is bad when it's getting too high. Inflation means that everybody's raising prices regardless of any added quality. So what's the value of anything at that point? Everything, all value starts eroding and decaying. That's a bad thing as well. Inflation tends to be better for low-income people because their income tends to be more directly tied to inflation. Deflation tends to be better for high-income people. And most of us are low-income rather than high-income. Overall, the economy does a lot better at a very low inflation rate. And that's something that is very clear. It'd be wonderful if we were perfect somehow and said we don't have any inflation or deflation. Nobody's figured out how to do that yet. I don't think that's going to be something that we figure out for quite some time. If we could, it'd be great. That means everybody would just be paid what they were worth rather than what everybody else is worth.
Well, you know, one of the arguments is made, if we just went on the gold standard, we wouldn't have inflation.
That's just a different kind of inflation, different kind of deflation. It's supply and demand inflation and deflation.
And probably the worst inflationary episode in the history of Western civilization occurred in the 1600s.
Right.
When the price of gold fell precipitously for almost 100 years.
Because they found a lot of it in the New World.
And the idea that people say we go on the gold standard, it's a fixed value. Well, actually, it's not. For instance, gold is down 8% from where it was last July. And that would be very deflationary. That would mean that you, if you have a mortgage or if you owe a credit card debt, it would have risen by 8% in 6 months. That's a 16%, effective 16% interest rate on any debt you had that you didn't have any other interest on. Yeah, if you had no debts and we were in the dollar were worth 8% more today than it were worth back then, and you had a steady stream of dollars coming in from someplace, that'd be great, except for the fact that that kind of deflation would cause people to have regular steady income and they live on that income to buy less stuff, which means that people would start getting, if we had an 8% drop in the dollar's value in 6 months.
That's inflation.
That's deflation. No, the other way around. Yeah. Dumb.
It's easy to do.
Yeah, I got it backwards.
I did it last time.
Basically,
a couple of weeks ago.
Gold would have put inflation on the dollar at 16% on an annualized basis since July. So to say that, and I've heard people say, well, we could do away with inflation, we just went on the gold standard.
No, it would be nice if we'd already discovered all the gold that exists anywhere and our population stopped growing. But we're still discovering gold and our population. Why did I say population stops growing? Because if we have a steady state, this is how much gold is out there, then we know what the value of all that gold is, as long as there's not more people. Because more people might want some gold too. And then you would have deflation. So there's this issue of prices being based on supply and demand rather than the ability to do a price based on the value of work. That's what fiat currencies do, is they say this should be a representation of the output of a country. And that's hard to understand in a short period of time, but just recognizing that all it takes is somebody to go and find a lot of gold in an asteroid and bring it back. And if our dollar was associated with gold, if it was tied to gold, we would have runaway inflation. No thanks.
And if the economy grew quickly, and by the way, this happened in the late 19th century in the United States, if the economy grew quickly, and we didn't have a fresh supply of gold, we'd run out of money.
Right.
That actually happened in the 1830s and again in the end of the 19th century in the United States. We ran into situations where we were on the gold standard, but we didn't have enough money to go around. So the value of a dollar went up dramatically while you were holding it. And that's really nice, except for the fact
that's deflation.
People didn't want to spend their dollars. they just hang on to them because they'd go up in value. And as a result, businesses were going out of business and people were getting laid off. And we had some real serious economic problems.
Yeah, we don't need threats to our economy based on the availability of one kind of metal, no matter what that metal is. We don't need a threat to our economy based on the availability of any single commodity. We need our threat to our economy based on whether or not we're productive, based on whether or not we're able to keep and do better with our jobs. And we're about out of time for the second hour this week. If you'd like to contact us off the air, we give customized investment advice to high net worth people. And the phone number to reach there locally, you'll get voicemail during the weekend, but live people during the week locally is
254-947-1111. That's 254-947-1111.
You can reach us toll free at 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You can email us directly, and we really appreciate that. We use it for the program quite a lot at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. Read our newsletter, ask to get sent the newsletter, listen to our podcast in case you hadn't had enough from this degree of insanity. Until next week, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Truth. It's not just a word on your Fox News station. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.